Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
So, you just started using LinkedIn Premium. Now what? Well, on your premium company page, you noticed around 7.5 times more page engagement and 5 times more page views. Well done. And now, new clients are messaging you. All because you're using LinkedIn Premium, which helps you get the business growth you want. Think big, small business. Think big. Start your free trial at linkedin.com/premium small business. That's linkedin.com/premium small business.
The Last Word
with Matt Cooper
on Today FM.
So it's time for our weekly travels to America. We're joined as ever by Marion McKeown and Cal Thomas. And Cal, first of all, what's your reaction, please, to the news of Joe Biden's cancer diagnosis?
Well, Matt, I think this is one of the biggest cover-ups in history and maybe the biggest, even bigger than Watergate, but more important than Watergate in the Nixon administration because this involved the health of the President of the United States. Now, I don't know why this information about Biden's physical exam was not put out. Bush put his out. Obama put his out. I have an annual physical exam, and my PSA numbers are part of that physical exam, as they are for most men. But the denials from the press secretary, Biden's press secretary, to his wife, to a whole bunch of other people that he was fine. Members of Congress went to meet with him, said he was articulate, engaged. His press secretary said that he wore her out because he was more athletic than she. It just rang untrue from what you saw and witnessed. And I think it's very, very sad. And that this is coming out now on the day or a couple of days before this book by Jake Tapper of CNN is released called Original Sin, that contains a lot of these signs that Biden was in decline mentally. And now we find out physically is more than coincidence, I think.
What do you think of all that, Mary McKeown? Bigger than Watergate as a cover-up?
Well, Cal, you know, I'm just going to say, let's put this in perspective. We'll get to the medical thing, and none of us here is doctors, so I think we have to defer to doctors who are not treating Biden, who are giving overall views on this, that this can be a really rapidly spreading, aggressive form of cancer that can just happen very, very quickly, or it could have been something that was there for quite a long time and was undetected, or indeed it could have been there for quite a long time, they knew about it and chose not to share it. But let me raise you a much better cover-up, Cal. 1893, Grover Cleveland, president of America, had cancer in his mouth. He was taken off to a boat. He was told, the public was told he'd gone fishing, taken to a friend's yacht. He had his mouth sawed open by surgeons with a dentist administering ether every time he came out from under. They ripped out his palate, 5 of his teeth, his entire top jawbone. Mm-hmm. Then they went back in again 2 days later. This was before anesthetic, before painkiller, before anything. Mm-hmm. And he was stretched on the table in a yacht. Mm-hmm. And then he was brought back, another operation, even more brutal 2 days later, and nothing was told. We know every president. You mentioned Lincoln. Go back to every president, and they have covered up their health. You know, go right through. I think that possibly Obama and Clinton were the only two who didn't conceal something. We know that, as I say, Reagan, his son Ron Reagan Jr. said that he had Alzheimer's while he was in the White House. We know he had colon cancer while he was in the White House. We know he had a bunch of other stuff. They all do it. I don't see how this is remains of a Watergate era. I think it's very sad. I think, as I said, that it may have been something that has happened since he left the White House. He may have had it while he was there undetected, or he may have, they may have not shared it. And certainly we know that there's a lot of evidence that they were either in denial or deliberately masking the extent of his decline. But like we've both said all along, Cal, and I think you know, agree with this, Joe Biden had no business ever running for a second term. Yeah. He should have done his one term as he said he would be, a one-term president, and handed over the reins. And that's kind of the end of it.
Right. Well, let's not forget Woodrow Wilson, who had a stroke in 1919.
That's right.
And it was covered up by his wife, Edith, and in complicity with certain members of the media at that time. So you're right. There have been a lot of health issues. But we're you know, even Biden's doctor has not said anything about this. He hasn't released any medical information about the president's physical exams. The president said during his first campaign and the second one, when asked if he was tested for cognitive issues, said that he's tested all the time. That's a direct quote of his. And yet there was never any information released on his cognitive status.
Okay, let's just hear a little bit how Donald Trump reacted when he was asked about Joe Biden's cancer diagnosis.
I think it's very sad, actually. I'm surprised that it wasn't, you know, the public wasn't notified a long time ago, because to get to stage 9, that's a long time. I just had my physical. You saw that. You saw the results of that particular test. I think that test is standard to pretty much anybody getting a physical, good physical. We had the doctors at the White House and over at Walter Reed, which is a fantastic hospital. I do it. I did a very complete physical, including cognitive tests. I'm proud to announce I aced it. Got them all. I got them all right. You proud of me? Yes. Your husband would be proud of me for getting them all right. It's a little risk. If I didn't get them all right, these people would be after me. It would be not a good situation. But I think, frankly, anybody running for president should take a cognitive test. They say it's unconstitutional, but I would say in that particular case, having a cognitive test wouldn't be so bad. But when you take tests, medical, as a male, that test is very standard. I don't know if it's given to everybody, but it's given just about. And it takes a long time to get to that situation. Now, I think, you know, to get to a stage 9, I think that if you take a look, it's the same doctor that said that Joe was cognitively fine, there was nothing wrong with him. Well, he said, if it's the same doctor, he said there was nothing wrong there, and that's being proven to be a sad situation.
Now, Cal, whatever about Donald Trump making it about himself, as he always does, as narcissist in chief, should he perhaps be taking cognitive tests on the back of that? Because there's no such thing as stage 9 cancer that he referred to twice. There is a thing called the Gleason test,
right,
in which there was a score of 9 for Biden. This is about the acceleration of the cancer. But if Donald Trump is mixing the two up, would that not suggest he needs independent cognitive testing?
We've talked about this before, Matt, even before the election. And I certainly agreed with you and Marion that I think every president of a certain age ought to have cognitive tests and every other kind of test. There shouldn't be any information about a president's mental or physical well-being that is withheld from the public. That just should be basic. It should be bipartisan. The president's PSA test, by the way, the latest one, was 0.10, which is very, very low. So, yes, he was mixing up the Gleason score with the PSA score, but most people understood what he was talking about.
Hold on, though. But if Joe Biden had done that when he was in office, you and others would have been jumping all over the place saying, oh look, he actually is mentally in decline. He can't make out one thing from the other. But it's okay when Trump does it.
No, it's not okay, but there's a big difference. We're not seeing Trump falling down, tripping over himself. We're not seeing Trump mangling sentences the way Biden has. Yes, he's mangled a few. We're not seeing Trump do some of the things that Biden did, forgetting even when he was vice president, forgetting when his son died in that Robert Hur interview last year in which he concluded that he couldn't file charges or ask for charges being filed against Trump because he is an elderly man and no jury would convict him of anything because they'd be sympathetic towards him. So it's not an equality here between Trump and Biden on this score.
Okay, just last thing on Biden with you, Marion McKeown. What can we expect out of this book by Jake Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson. Suggestions that he was preparing to use a wheelchair if he had been re-elected, and various other revelations.
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of this, Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson, Al Thompson, they're both solid journalists. And I think they're reporting what was really, you know, again, as we said, that Biden just had no business running for a second term from the get-go. And his team, instead of pointing that out to him, did sort of go along to him. Now, he did have, it seems, and I know from the advanced bits of the books that I've seen, that his staff, and it did seem that because he was undeniably in decline.
Marion, his staff, I mean, how much responsibility do his staff have to take? Does his wife have to take? Senior figures in the Democratic organisation. I mean, did they have some sort of plan that they thought, well, Kamala Harris can't beat Trump, but Biden can, so Biden wins, and then Biden hands over to Kamala Harris 6 months later? Was it something like that that they had in mind?
Honestly, I've no idea. I don't know if that would have been it at all. I think that the thing that they said, and they said it to us reports, like, you know, he's tired, he gets tired more easily, he has some bad days, and then he would have some very clear, very good days, like, because it's not an even line, it's not an even descent, it's up, it's down, but it's a gradual decline downwards that he seems to have had, as well as that I had several, one neurologist in particular who said to me that, you know, you can't diagnose somebody you haven't examined directly, but he said he showed all of the signs of Parkinson's, the gait in particular and the facial paralysis, he said, were two classic signs. But the public felt, and I think that they really did feel, that Biden and his staff and his top aides were concealing evidence, that Biden, and that was the sense you got, that he was going to be trounced if he ran. And this business where he's gone back on TV recently, and he believes, and he says that he still thinks he could have won. And you have to think, in what universe? Because the public sensed that he was ailing, the public saw that he was ailing, and the public did sense that there was a cover-up. Now, it was too late when he handed over to Kamala Harris, and we said that on the show. That ship was too big to turn around at the last minute.
Okay, well, let's move on. I'm going to start with you on this one, Marion. Okay, I want to talk about James Comey. James Comey has been a guest on this programme on a number of occasions. He's been in studio in here with us twice. But James Comey, the former head of the FBI, is very much back in the news because of an 86-47 post. Now, can you explain to me what an 86-47 is?
Yep. Okay. Can I preface this, Matt, by saying that James Comey, to my mind, is another narcissist who cannot get enough attention. And I have very little admiration for James Comey. And he was way too political when he was director of the FBI. And I think it's no coincidence that this controversy has blown up before his new thriller is coming out, a new book that he's just written. So James Comey claims that he was walking along the beach with his wife, and he saw in the sand an arrangement of shells which said 86-47. Now, 86 is a common phrase, and I worked as a restaurant as a student for many, many years, and I know that people did say 86 that dish, or that item is 86, meaning it's got rid of, it's no longer on the menu, it's used by other people. I mean, we've all heard it, something is 86, it's gone. So he took it as 86-47. 86 was the expression, and 47 is Trump, the 47th president. So it was like, oh, get rid of Trump, 86-47. And so he posted it and thought that it was kind of funny or kind of cool or whatever. He posted it to get attention also, because James Comey craves attention. And it was a stupid thing. I think it was a stupid thing for a former FBI director to post in the first place. They are meant to be apolitical. James Comey never was, but we leave that aside. And of course, the predictable furore blew up, and Trump started going, woohoo, he's telling somebody to kill me. He's telling somebody to kill me. But this was a president who did have an assassination attempt on his life and came very close to being assassinated. So, you know, Comey, even if he says now, oh, I never dreamt anybody could take that interpretation, why do it in the first place is my question. And now he's going, P.S., I have a book coming out next week.
Marion, I'm in tears. I'm agreeing with you so much. It's just overwhelming. Let's not forget that that Comey previously claimed to have found a seashell on the seashore about electing Kamala Harris. This has got to be the most political beach in the world. I have never seen anything like jacket. I have never seen shells arranged on a beach for or against any political person. So I think you're right. I think this is just a publicity stunt. Maybe he arranged the shells himself. Who knows?
But what about the hysterical overreaction from the right to this? I mean, you have the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, saying that he should be thrown in jail. Let's just hear how Comey responded to that.
I hope people know enough about that particular person that they understand where it's coming from. It says something more depressing about the leadership of our current administration. And I just shrug because that's ridiculous.
Does it make you scared?
No.
Why?
Well, it's not my first rodeo. I would hate something like this or the audit, all the investigations to happen to someone who doesn't have my experience, because I look at it and I think there's another one of those. But when it's one of the real problems we have in this country right now is the use of the president's power aiming at individuals who don't have my background or experience.
Okay, so what do you think, Cal, of, I mean, Tulsi Gabbard is only one of many who have been outraged, despite the fact that the 86 call has been made by many of them against their political enemies over the years.
Yeah, well, as you know, Matt, I was not a fan of her nomination or this position that she is holding now. I think that this threat to throw people in jail is ridiculous, and it is harmful, and it contributes even more to the divisions in our country, which are bad enough as bad as I've seen them since, really, the Civil War or maybe the Vietnam War in closer to modern times. The talk is just unnecessary. I mean, you can point out that the guy was stupid or it was a publicity stunt or whatever, but it's not worthy of jail time, for heaven's sakes.
Okay, Trump, of course, also said that he would solve the Ukraine-Russia war on his first day back in office. He answered questions yesterday from reporters about the phone call that he's had with the Russian Premier or President Vladimir Putin.
It's a very big egos involved, I tell you. Big egos involved, but I think something's going to happen. And if it doesn't, I just back away and they're going to have to keep going. Again, this was a European situation. It should have remained a European situation. Should have remained, but we have, because the past administration felt very strongly that we should be involved, that we got involved much more than Europe did in terms of the money. And
did you ask President Putin to meet with you?
About what?
About Ukraine.
Of course I did. I talked to him about it. I said, when are we going to end this, Vladimir? I've known him for a long time now. I said, when are we going to end this bloodshed, this bloodbath? It's a bloodbath. But I said to him, we got to get going. And I did say also, if I thought that you couldn't do it, I'd step away, because what are you going to do? We don't have boots on the ground. We wouldn't have boots on the ground. I believe Putin wants to do it. Now, if I thought Putin didn't want, I mean, that's what I do. My whole life is like deals, one big deal. And if I thought that President Putin did not want to get this over with, I wouldn't even be talking about it, because I'd just pull out.
Carl, what do you make of that?
Total idiocy, Matt. Total idiocy. I mean, you're dealing with somebody who is a pagan dictator, who kills his opponents, who locks up journalists, who has no intention of making peace, who doesn't recognize Ukraine as a sovereign nation, but part of Russia, just like Crimea. And Trump's big mistake here, and I think it was a mistake on his Middle East trip, however that may turn out in the end, is that he thinks economic prosperity is going to settle any kind of problem. Hey, we'll build hotels in Gaza. All you people are going to have great jobs. Hey, we're going to build hotels and prosperity in Russia. He says he's going to pull away if Russia doesn't agree to peace. What he should do is reimpose sanctions. That has a problem. That has a possibility, rather, of bringing Putin to the table, but not this business that he's engaged in now of the prosperity gospel.
Yeah, I see. Talking of gospels, I see he also suggested, Marion, passing it off to the Vatican to do the job that blessed Donald Trump thought he could do.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, let's not forget that he said all along that, you know, when he was president, he'd end this war in a day, within 24 hours would all be over. This is just embarrassing. It's embarrassing to see his idiocy on display, his lack of experience, his abysmal record as any kind of a negotiator. Putin is running rings around him. He has him exactly where he wants. Putin would like nothing better than for America to walk away, because if America were to walk away, that would mean there would be no more military aid for Ukraine, which has allowed Ukraine to not be cowed and defeated by Russia for 3 years now, 3 years and 3 months this war has been going on, and Ukraine has managed to stand up to Russia and hold the line, although it is losing ground, but not nearly as much as everybody thought. So for Trump, as Cal said, what Trump should do now, if he's serious, is say to Ukraine, we're going to give you as much military aid as you want right now, and we're going to impose brutal sanctions on Russia, and see if that doesn't bring Putin to the table, because what he is doing is he's given Putin exactly what he wants. There are now no consequences for Putin continuing on this war. America has decided to just walk away, shrug its shoulders, become a neutral observer, and let the Pope sort it, let Europe sort it, let anybody else sort it except for Trump. It's really kind of shocking, but just to see how easy it is for him to be duped by Putin, who has played rope-a-dope with Trump from the get-go with you know, incredibly successful results. And, you know, it was pointed out, I think, by the TASS spokesperson, oh, that the call was so good, neither of them wanted to end the conversation, neither of them wanted to hang up. And I just thought, Jesus, you know, remember that when you were a teenager, you go, no, you hang up, no, you hang up. It's like, it's just embarrassing. The whole thing is just embarrassing. But anyway, it's also terrible because, you know, we're forgetting that human lives are being lost every day. There are innocent lives being lost every day in this brutal war, which is ongoing, and there is no incentive for Putin to do anything except keep fighting, because he knows Trump is now bored with this, that he's effectively washed his hands of it.
I notice how he called him Vladimir at one stage as well, remarkably chummy. Last week, Cal, we spoke about the grift in the Middle East that Trump was on, the desire to take a $400 million gift of an aircraft from Qatar. But apart from that, his two sons going around accepting investments and getting into hotels and golf club deals and all sorts of things. But even that pales by comparison with the cryptocurrency grift that's underway. And in two nights' time, there's going to be a dinner with President Trump at Virginia Golf Club, which he owns outside Washington. And it's for the top 220 holders of these Donald Trump meme coins. I mean, has there ever been anything as blatant when it comes to using the office of the United States for personal enrichment, Cal?
I don't think so, Matt. That's certainly nothing in my lifetime, in my professional life as a reporter and columnist. I'm not aware of it. I mean, there was a member of the big controversy during the Carter administration over Billy Beer. People said that the president's brother was putting his name on beer cans to make profits, and that he was cozying up to the dictator Gaddafi. I've never seen anything like this. Now, I don't understand cryptocurrency. It's way beyond my understanding, but I think there's a lot of corruption that obviously going on in the Trump family. We talked about this before. He's selling Bibles he doesn't read. He's selling all kinds of things. It continues in office. I mean, this is something that would have been denounced as recently as a decade ago. I'm just amazed that no Republican is standing up and saying, this is a bad image for our party and a bad image for the presidency.
But Marion, nobody is standing up. Even at the moment, sort of the budget bill that's going through Congress has made these suggestions in relation. I mean, it makes it look as if the tax situation for some of the less well-off people has improved. But that gets wiped out and more by the loss of their Medicare. You also have a bill going through which will add trillions to the deficit over the next number of years.
Yeah,
and the Republicans are too terrified to stand up to their bully leader.
It's astonishing. I mean, it's astonishing with this thing that what's going on, these wallet holders, as they're called, and this guy, Justin Sun in particular, who was investigated by the SEC, who was barred from doing business, from trading in the US, and Trump's sons, you know, these two clowns who you know, really, they, I mean, if were they not in the position they're in, they probably couldn't make a dime between them, and that they are now pushing for the full pardon of him and another guy who was convicted of criminal fraud, who they want to do trade with because they're buying loads of these Trump coins. It's absolutely appalling. As you said, we're looking at a $5 trillion and added deficit if this bill goes through. And nobody seems to care about that except for a couple of the fringe members of, you know, on the far right of the Republican Party. And it's almost as if everybody is just exhausted. The Democrats are doing an abysmal job, it has to be said, about pointing this out as well, because they don't seem to have any coherent message on any of it. But it's just, the grift is so great. And then these wallet holders, as they're called, we don't know who they are. Who are most of them? We've no idea. We know that there are a couple of different, none, very few of them are American. And what we also have been told is that, yes, you know, about 500,000 of them have made about $5 billion between them, but another 500,000 have lost about $4 or $5 billion between them. It's a Ponzi scheme, essentially. And the people who came to it later are losing money. And it's always the way, the Trump stuff. The people who can ill afford to lose money are always the ones who are hit hardest, because the ones who know, the ones who are in the circle, get the inside information and get out early. I don't know where this is all going to lead, but I would wager nowhere good.
Okay, and just to finish with you, Cal, what do you think of the deficit being increased by trillions, mainly to give tax cuts to the wealthy? Particularly, I see, for example, you have a situation, they're increasing the limit at which a trust fund can give money in inheritance to the rich when a rich person dies. 30 million quid can be put in the trust fund, and all of its profits can also be distributed when the person dies tax-free.
Well, we've talked about this before, Matt. The government doesn't lack revenue. It takes in more money than any time in this nation's history, and we are 249 years old come this July 4th. The problem is the spending. Ronald Reagan used to say we have a debt not because the American people are taxed too little, but because their government spends too much. And Marion correctly mentions only a few Republicans, she says, on the far right, but are trying to hold the line against some of this spending. As far as the rich are concerned, the rich are the ones who pay most of the taxes. You've got, 1% of the country paying about 40% of the income taxes. So it's not like there's some unfairness going on here. Poor people don't pay taxes. Half the people don't pay income taxes. And
because their income is so low, and because they're barely able to exist with the prices.
Well, I've been, I'm not a fan of the graduated income tax. We earned revenue for the country on tariffs and other things before the amendment to the Constitution was passed in the early 20th century for a graduated income tax. I think it is harmful, and I think it just encourages the federal government not to be disciplined when it comes to spending, as we're seeing now with this current bill they're trying to sell us.
Thank you very much, Cal Thomas and Marion McKeown.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.